Welcome to Our Interesting Times with host Timothy Kelly, who interviews today's top alternative and revisionist thinkers.
May you live in interesting times.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. My guest this evening is William Ramsey. William is an author. He wrote Prophet of Evil, Aleister Crowley, 9/11, and the New World Order, and Abomination, Devil Worship and Deception in the West Memphis Three Murders. He's also the proprietor of Occult Investigations, a website dedicated to covering the role of the occult in the intrigues of the deep state, and the host of a weekly program, William Ramsey Investigates, on the Awake Radio Network. William, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back on your show.
Well, thanks for coming back on. Well, last time we talked, we discussed Aleister Crowley and the long shadow he cast on the 20th century and the 21st century, and his influence in shaping the culture, the politics of our age. And, I feel his name might pop up in our conversation tonight again.
Agreed.
Because we're dealing with some of these emails that WikiLeaks has released regarding John Podesta and the Hillary Clinton campaign. And, of course, these leaks have given the general public a sort of an insight into Hillary and Bill Clinton's political machine and their scandals and their corruption, pay for play. But there's also something much more disturbing being revealed in these emails. It seems to suggest that John Podesta and perhaps his brother may be involved in an elite pedophile ring that goes very high up the political food chain in Washington, D.C. What's your take on all this as the information comes in?
Well, I think that the WikiLeaks revelations, really what they are, is just incredible revelations about the inner work, like you said, the inner workings of the Hillary campaign, but just this pedophilic element that runs through them all, I think, is unparalleled in the United States political history, because the revelations that are in there, and you see these kind of terms that these guys use, pizza, hot dogs, and as the WikiLeaks kind of continued, nobody really keyed into until right before the election on November 8th, when the spirit cooking email broke that involved a so-called artist by the name of Marina Abramovich, and she was involved in a conversation with John Podesta and his brother, or an email with them about going to a spirit cooking dinner that involves pig's blood, human, semen and milk, breast milk, and all this stuff. So I think that's what really people keyed into. Once they saw that, then they started kind of investigating and really saw these connections that led to some other people who are high up. Actually, somebody who GQ named one of the top 50 most important people in D.C., a guy by the name of James Alefantis, who is a proprietor of restaurants, one of which is Comet Ping Pong. And there have been some political events that are held there, and this place is kind of far up on the northwest side of D.C. And there are fundraisers, and the Podesta, actually, one of the Podestas, has his birthday party there every year, and he's been seen hugging this guy. Well, it turns out that there's like a cult symbolism on the outside of the Comet Ping Pong, but there also was all of these strange conversations that took place, not just in the WikiLeaks email, but also on this guy James Alefantis' Instagram page. People were referencing other pedophile terms. And what it looks like is this guy, Alefantis, actually was, I think until recently, the boyfriend of another power player, I guess, or somebody who could be termed an important part of the Clinton machine, a guy by the name of David Brock, who runs Media Matters, and another one, Correct at the Record, which was a very aggressive defendant of Hillary Clinton online. They were known for trolling almost anybody who had anything negative to say about them, about Hillary Clinton. So David Brock is not some fringe player. He was very involved in politics. And there's actually a picture of him on James Alefantis' Instagram page. But since November 8th, you know, in the last 2 weeks, the independent researchers have just been on a tear on Reddit and on YouTube and on 4chan, putting together pieces and analyzing a lot of these pictures and a lot of these relationships. And it hasn't gotten better. I mean, the allegations or the implications of a lot of these pictures and what they're trying to say has not been lessened. It's been made worse. And there's very aggressive things happening on Reddit. And a lot of these, there's been some censorship, some of these things. People have said something and YouTube has turned off their monetization on some of these videos that discuss this issue. But what it looks like at the end of the day is that there is an occult-oriented pedophile group that goes to the very top, at least in this kind of this revelation, on to the very top of Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Hmm. Now, David Brock is an interesting character because I remember back in the 90s, he was a journalist working for the American Spectator, and he was part of what I think it was called the Arkansas Project. And right. It was to dig up dirt on Hillary Clinton. I think he ran a series of articles at the time. I think it was called The Lady Macbeth of Little Rock or something. I think it was the title, if I recall, going way back here.
It's good. And, you have a good memory. That's true, because everybody was shocked when he flipped. He flipped from a right-wing agitator to a left-wing agitator.
And he claimed he was paid to dig up all this. Of course, what he dug up was never really, really challenged. It was just called a smear. Whether it was true or not is another story. But regarding some of the scandals in Little Rock, tame by what we now know, and also much more. The way I look at those things are much different than I looked at them then. Because I looked at it more from a partisan standpoint. Because what we know about Mina and Iron Contra and the Bushes and Oliver North, so it's a bit more convoluted. But he claimed at the time he was paid to go down there and just kind of dig up dirt or write these articles rather. And then he turned like around 1993, 94 and came out that he was this homosexual. And there's a big spread like in Washingtonian or one of these magazines with him like tied to a tree or something.
I think he's done a stint in a mental institution. He's has a very colorful background, but he's still getting paid good money.
Yeah.
If you look at some of the emails and some of the information that's come about, I think Media Matters raised like $10 million 1 year. So it's not a small operation.
And he was, I guess he was involved in some sort of romantic, or you want to call it that, relations with this guy, Alefantis?
Correct.
Okay, and so that's...
But there was a love triangle that involved Alefantis and Brock's prior boyfriend, who ended up suing him and winning a judgment of $850,000.
Okay. So as Alefantis' character, he owns Comet Pizza.
Correct.
Comet Ping Pong Pizza. And, of course, what these emails reveal is these various code words. Now, you did a very good detailed discussion with Ed Opperman and Kurt Haskell, kind of dissecting these emails. And, you know, I think both you and Kurt pointed out that these emails make no sense if you take them literally. They do make sense if you treat them as some sort of code words for illegal activity, of illegal activity. And, you know, and I don't think it's drugs.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. I think that they're keywords. I mean, I've been told, and this kind of, bears out, is that hot dog is a boy, pizza is a girl, cheese is a little girl, pasta is a little boy. Ice cream means a male prostitute. So, and those in there, they're in these emails, they're mentioned in strange contexts. Somebody wrote to John Podesta, "I really enjoyed your hot dog stand in Hawaii," which is a very unusual thing to say because according to Hawaiians that I've talked to online, there's no hot dog stands there. Actually, it's not the kind of food that people eat there. So that's one example of something out of context.
Yeah.
Somebody said he wrote another email, said he wanted pizza for an hour. So who schedules a pizza for an hour? You know, that's it's just very strange, you know, strange conversation. So,
and yeah, where a realtor found
handkerchief.
Handkerchief with a map on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I deliver. Apparently, it's a checkered handkerchief, black and white, which means dominatrix with a white girl, I think, or something like that, or whatever. But yeah, and the map is apparently would be DNA.
That's what I've heard. I've also heard that a map is a minor attracted person, but this is from Susan Sandler. She says, the realtor found a handkerchief. I think it has a map that seems pizza related. Is it yours? They can send it if you want. I know you're busy, but feel free to respond if it's not yours or don't want it.
Would you take it as like a implied blackmail?
That's an interesting angle.
Because that's like saying, you know.
Right. Like, I've got something on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is, I think, which is one level of all this, I think, is a you see this running through the Franklin scandal, the Mark Dutroux affair, is that this is a blackmail operation. Same thing with Epstein.
Right. You know,
because it's being recorded. And this is how you compromise. It's how you suborn governments and powerful people.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, I think that this, you know, nobody's really, none of the victims have come forward on this thing, but you never know what's going to happen.
Well, I was going through the photos, and if the website I was visiting is to be believed, that some of these photos on this Instagram, it's like they have little child sized coffins.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's one of the that came from. So, Alefantis ran his Instagram as Jimmy Comet, and the interesting element, a lot of like really intrepid investigators went through and checked out the people he followed or who followed him. And that was one of those pictures that came out of one of his followers, was some very creepy person who made child-sized coffins. And I think it was the guy's name was Working on My Night Cheese. So here's the cheese terminology. And he writes, full weld ran, ground, sanded, blued. And that picture, you know, I have that picture. It's, you know, and then there's somebody else who chimes in, well done, kiddo. You know, like this. And there's all of these other statements who are made in these Instagram pictures. You know, like there's one that references there's a young boy, Jimmy, and somebody, Jimmy Comet, writes in chicken lovers, you know, where chicken is another phrase for a young boy or girl.
And they have these photographs there that are just, I mean,
yeah, remarkable. I mean, you know, there's tons of photographs of Alefantis with Podesta, one of the Podesta brothers. They're a remarkable record, and it's just incredible. There's actually a really heavy duty occult reference. Alefantis was a producer for a film called The Chapel Perilous. It was a short movie. And The Chapel Perilous directly references Robert Anton Wilson, who was a Discordian and an occultist and an admirer of Aleister Crowley. And that was kind of the place you went. You know, it was like a dark place of learning. You have to go into The Chapel Perilous.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when I saw that, that was another, you know, one of these remarkable things that indicates these guys are up to no good.
And if you go to the website of this place, Comet Ping Pong Pizza, it advertises itself as a kid-friendly family restaurant. But look at the photographs the paintings there, the artwork they have there is completely inappropriate for children, if not for adults.
Yeah, there's a mural in the background of somebody holding somebody's head in their lap. And there's some, apparently the bathrooms have even more lurid murals. And it's just kind of creepy when you put the lens on, like, this is a creepy place. You realize the ping pong table out front can be seen as like an attractor to little kids. Oh, ping pong, you know, you can see that element of like this pedophile playground. And there's some very disturbing videos online. Alefantis did a segment with Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with Guy Fieri. And you just kind of get this feeling like it's not right. It's not right. And well, it's just amazing. There's a long tunnel complex that runs under Connecticut Avenue. And these guys, there's pictures of them underground, you know, digging trenches and making jokes about, you know, sexual activity inside these holes. It's really it's just incredible.
And that, there's that one video that I saw with the guys talking about pizza. Right. Boy. Yeah. And
believe it or not, that's a girl. That's a girl from a band called Heavy Breathing.
Okay, and, that's a girl. That sounds like an effeminate male.
It does. It does. It's hard to believe. But her name is somebody's tracked her down as well. Her name is, I think, Kleinman, if I remember correctly. But yeah, please. Yeah, she says some very interesting stuff.
Well, what I can only gather from that is she's referring to some sort of like childhood sacrifice. Right?
Well, I didn't get that part, but I did see one of those videos of her where she's talking about like people's preferences, and somebody shouts from the audience, "Little boys," and she says, "Oh, everybody has their preference."
Okay, that's another video. I saw one where she's talking about, she's apparently referring to a cord and the baby, says euthanasia, and then
I remember that. I saw that.
Yeah, so it's
There's another video of her where she says, "This is not Satan's place. Satan is down beneath us, you know, and we have to do something to bring him here." I was like, "What?" It was like a ritualized thing. I'll show you that. I have that video. So.
Yeah, it would be bad enough if this were going on, but when you have power players, you know, John Podesta, chief of staff of the Clinton administration, he was the chairman of the Hillary Clinton's campaign, and
he gave the concession speech. He gave the concession speech. When Hillary was too drunk to come forward or too enraged, he was the one who gave kind of a half, you know, kind of admission. Wait till tomorrow, the votes may come in. I mean, why would he say that? Did he expect extra votes to be tallied? I don't know.
And there's an email referring to, is it the White House or President Obama spending $65,000 to fly pizza in from Chicago?
Yeah, that's something else. So somebody traced that back. That was in a different set of emails that came from Stratfor. Stratfor was hacked by a guy named Hammond, who went to jail. He was actually prosecuted by the New York federal prosecutor. I think it was Preet Bharara, a guy kind of is a well-known prosecutor, and sent him to jail. But those were Stratfor emails were sent out. And in one of those emails, there's a statement that said $65,000 for pizza and hot dogs sent in. And then they said, "Are we going to get those? And are we using the usual channels?"
Yes, that does not make sense. First of all, no one would spend 65 grand on pizza from Chicago, and no one would fly food in. And even the White House doesn't. I mean, the White House wouldn't do that anyway. But again, it's one of those things where if you read it literally, it makes no sense. But if you decipher it based on what we think these terms mean, it makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the exact statement. "I think Obama spent about $65,000 of the taxpayers' money flying in pizza dogs from Chicago for a private party at the White House not long ago. Assume we are using the same channels." And then somebody writes back, "If we get the same waitresses in quotes, I'm all for it." So it's remarkable. The fact that it goes back to Chicago too.
Yeah.
You know, before he became president, there were rumors that were substantiated. He was hanging out at a gay men's club called Boys Town or Boys Club? Men's Club. I think it was called Men's Club. I wish I could remember the name of it. But that place had like torture chambers and all this kind of weird, creepy stuff that reminded me of one of the Instagram pictures of on Alephantis' Instagram, where they have a secret room where somebody writes, "Oh, that's the kill room," or something like that. But it's amazing. Some of these things, you know, that are coming up.
And there's also a nearby business, another pizza place called Besta Pizza, which Insignia until very recently is a sign for pedophilia, even according to the FBI. Correct.
Correct. So there's like a triangular shaped sign, and Besta can be translated to beast in Portuguese. But it's literally like two or three stores down. It's actually three stores down from Comet Ping Pong. And somebody noticed that within the last week or two, that insignia has changed. And this guy, one of the interesting things they found and traced back is this guy's name was Andrew Klein, I believe, who was appointed by Hillary Clinton to be somebody to oversee human trafficking. And there was another person, who a guy by the name of Aaron Rao, R-A-O, who was another attorney who was involved in something similar, who was making comments on Alifantis's Instagram page. So it's led some people to believe, I mean, Kurt Haskell said he thinks that those people are appointed to selectively prosecute, you know, that some of these things are going to be overseen and some are going to be prosecuted, which I think was an interesting insight.
Well, which what if you were running an operation like this, it's the same thing they do with drugs. You'd have to appoint people who are going to, facilitate the operation at the same time, prevent any meaningful investigation from occurring.
Correct. Absolutely. And that sounds like something the Clinton machine has done over and over, whether it's the email scandal and Loretta Lynch or James Comey, you know, looking the other way. So, yeah.
Or the medical examiner down in Arkansas.
Yeah, really. I mean, that was a perfect example. Yeah. I mean, there was a guy who literally, I think he was cut in half or something, and they said he committed suicide. Yeah. So, you know, those appointments are really plum jobs, you know.
Yes.
You get paid a significant amount of money with great benefits and, you know, I wouldn't see why somebody wouldn't want that job.
Now, the Clinton Foundation itself has been linked to child trafficking because we have this lady, Silsby, Laura Silsby.
Right. Yep.
And the Clinton Foundation seemed to go, at least Hillary Clinton and also Hama Abedin, of course, the estranged wife of Anthony Weiner, a.k.a. Carlos Danger.
Right.
And she apparently – they. Made well, first of all, Silsby, I think, was caught trying to kidnap 33 kids from Haiti, claiming they were
Correct.
Orphans.
That's right, claiming they were orphans, but they were not orphans.
Yeah,
a lot of them had families, and it was under something called New Life Children, which kind of is creepy, kind of Christian sounding thing, kind of reminds me of Second Life, that Sandusky ran for years, you know,
which was a
huge pedophile operation,
which again. That's another example of an investigation being shut down, and prosecutors being killed, and Penn State completely shut down that investigation because they paid huge fines even though Sandusky was not an employee of Penn State. It seemed like they were covering something. I think Ed Opperman interviewed who was it?
I wish I could remember.
It was a great interview because he led an insight into this thing that I had yet to hear before I heard the interview.
Yeah, I think three of the administrators were fired or censured or something because they looked the other way. I wish I could remember the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the guys, Greikar, I think his name was Greikar, was the prosecutor who disappeared. And supposedly before he disappeared, took his laptop, took out the hard disk and chucked it in a river. Because they found it. They found the hard disk separate from his laptops.
And that what suggests there, Sandusky again was a procurer. He was like a middle level guy,
there was a suggestion that was it. That the other people were involved. That somebody said he was seen with another really deranged pedophile called Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z, and they called him Uncle Seitz, who was involved. And that would make that would connect him to other people of similar interest, Sandusky and Seitz.
Yeah, and that's when they brought in what former FBI Director Louis Freeh to steer it in a certain direction, kind of put the lid on it. And he's an example of another political hack, you know, who would get in there and just keep a lid on it because, what it threatens to expose would probably, could topple the entire regime if people knew about what's going on.
If it went that high and you get all of these powerful people, just like it was in Nebraska, it went all the way through the elite. Same thing that happened with the Dutroux. It went all the way through the entire ruling class of Belgium, who were probably involved and being blackmailed. And, those things, they don't have a choice. And probably, I bet the Saville thing, I bet there were very powerful people. I mean, there were very powerful people.
Well,
we're talking about Ted Heath. So,
the Prime Minister.
Yeah, the Prime Minister.
Look at it. I mean, look how casual Americans are. We had Denny Hastert was exposed, although he wasn't charged with it. His legal trouble with the structuring, the money, exposed his pedophilia, which goes back to his days as a wrestling coach back in Chicago. But I've been hearing things about Hastert for years.
Interesting. He was mentioned in the emails. He was mentioned in WikiLeaks as a friend of Podesta.
Yes.
Very recently, within the last year, you know.
And people say, well, how could someone with such behavior, with a record, because there were rumors back when he was in high school, and he was, you know, he inherited this congressional seat because someone died, I think, got sick and died. Mm-hmm. But apparently, it's a heavily Republican district, so once that person died, he was going to get elected. But there were rumors then about his behavior. People say, well, how did he rise politically? So that's, well, if you understand how this works, that's why he rose politically.
Well said. Exactly. They had some on him. I'm sure he did whatever he was told.
Yes.
You know, yes, boss, whatever you got, whatever you want.
But we have a former Speaker of the House, which, if I do my line of succession correctly, I think that is fourth in line to the presidency.
Yes. So it goes president, vice president,
Secretary of State, right?
Secretary of State, yeah, I think so.
And then Speaker of the House. Yeah. A pedophile, a notorious pedophile, a sex tourist who frequented Asia a lot. And so, but then people's reaction go, oh, well, do you think it stops with him? And then, of course, we have the Mark Foley scandals and the reason why Hastert didn't crack down on that. And we have up in Congress, and Wayne Madsen has written about this, about often these Senate and congressional offices are stables for interns who are there to service the perverts on Capitol Hill.
That's interesting. When I was there, I was there from 95 to 98 in D.C. and knew very close friends who worked in Rayburn, one of these big congressional offices. So we would walk around. I was there once a week. You know, I was there all the time. And there was one guy from – and everybody knew, all the interns and all the people working at the offices, they knew there was one guy from Oregon who eventually got busted. And they said, just never go in that office. Don't ever – and everybody knew. And what he would do is, like, if this attractive woman would go in, he'd come up to her and try to kiss her. And he ended up getting busted and censured. But before it happened, we all knew. We knew the story.
Yeah.
So – I think a lot of people know, they just keep their mouth shut. Like, I'm trying to find his name. But yeah, so I think that DC has an underbelly that is as bad as, you know, anything probably happens in New York. What happens, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens.
But I guess we talk about the Clinton Foundation in Haiti. Of course, they're a record in Haiti with the
His name is Bob Packwood.
Oh, yeah. Bob. Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Bob
yeah.
Packwood was the guy from Oregon, and he was a senator, and people just said, never go in there.
Well, then we have, of course, the Barney Frank scandal. And the good people of Massachusetts saw fit to reelect him. He was running – prostituting being run out of his house.
With his boyfriend, that's right.
Yeah, Stephen Gobi, I think, was his name. Mm-hmm. And –
when you take a wide angle view, man, it doesn't look good. You know, these people are up to no good.
But out there in Haiti, of course, you had all the money they've collected, all this money for relief in Haiti, and it's turned around and been given to a bunch of friends and friends of Bill and the Clintons. And
it was a substantial amount of money too, $10 billion or something.
Yeah.
Something huge that 95% or 98% is gone, vanished, with no work, very little work done, if any done at all. You know, so it's an incredible theft to a truly impoverished country that was hit hard by that earthquake.
And of course, what appears with the Clinton Foundation was it was a money laundering operation for Hillary Clinton's pay for play, bribery schemes while she was Secretary of State. But this is typical of how they operate, though. This is how they ran the Arkansas Development Agency, right?
Finance
ADFA,
agency. That's right.
Yeah. Of course, the reason why that's never really investigated isn't just because the Clintons have such a sharp, such a sharp operation. It's because that also, I think, implicated greater powers, because Clintons were working for the Bushes during the 80s with Iran-Contra, and that was Bush at the National Security Council, and that was the MENA operation with Barry Seal. They get some CIA and cocaine and crack cocaine epidemic, and getting to Gary Webb. That's why Gary Webb has to commit suicide by shooting himself twice in the head.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. I mean, it's an incredible story. I mean, these guys have been at it for 30 years. They're pros. So I think I bet they put all their chips into winning this election. I was surprised that Hillary lost, to be honest with you. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in this new administration, whether they really want to burrow in and dig deep into the criminality or just wash it clean. We'll see.
There's some speculation that the reason why these emails broke, because I think WikiLeaks is a kind of a controlled op. Mm-hmm. And basically it's an operation of the intelligence agencies itself, of the deep state. Mm-hmm. And of course, controlled leaks is the name of the game. And you have various factions. It isn't a monolithic operation, various factions within these agencies, or just even at the mid-level where you have, when you're Clinton's and you've been carrying on the way you have for the past 30, 40 years, you're going to make a lot of enemies along the way. Because a lot of people have died, and lives have been ruined. So they're going to be people with grudges and able to, when the time comes to make it hurt, get some payback. That might have happened here. It also could be that the people that choose our candidates for us decided that Clinton was simply too corrupt to be a useful puppet. And
I agree.
The system has to maintain some credibility after all, right? It has to have
Can you imagine if they stole the election with all of this crime and all of her very, very ill? The credibility of the entire government was it, and the people were talking about conflict, People from who were in the deep state saying, hey, this is a problem. When those people come forward and say that, I totally agree with you. There are things in WikiLeaks. Why aren't certain other things leaked, There are some things that are leaked, but why aren't the CIA documents?
Julian Assange won't touch 9/11. Right.
Right. Good point. He denies that. So that can tell you something right there.
What that operation is all about. And I've heard some other interview Dr. Joseph Farrell about his idea of what happened with Trump. And I originally thought Trump was put up there to ensure her victory.
Likewise.
And about then around October, I started to see things happening. I said, wait a second, because I never thought Hillary's support was so shallow.
Right,
and I think she almost her candidate itself was almost like an avatar, just wasn't real. Her support wasn't real, and
Wasn't real. Everything was fake. The polls were rigged, so the polls were propaganda.
So there's nothing there.
All of the people who liked her were propaganda. Her stadium seating and all of her speeches were fake, and nobody was there. There was literally nobody there, but Trump, man, those aren't. I don't know how they could fake filling those stadiums with 10,000 people.
Yeah,
with paying them all, and I mean all of her stuff come out to the thing. I'll pay $18 an hour. So her whole thing. I don't know.
Even then, even now, where now they're trying to keep counting these popular votes, where she's up like a 1.5 million. Mm-hmm. And of course, no one wants to address that because of the voter fraud. Because out in California, with all the illegals voting and all that, there's an effort. To mention the fact that when you run on the electoral college system, you don't campaign the states you're going to lose. Right. It changes your electoral strategy. So the popular vote has no legal standing whatsoever in the election of the president. Right. But it wasn't even counted until the 1830s, I think. No one bothered with it. And I personally have to go back to a system where just the legislatures appoint electors and we'd be spared all this nonsense.
All this craziness and expenditure. I mean, she spent $1 billion. Look at the money that's spent on this.
Yeah.
If not more. It's just crazy.
But the idea is that what happened was, I look at it sort of as an optimistic thing, is that there's a faction within the ruling elite that's maybe said, hey, we're going too far with this globalism stuff and we have to reverse a little bit. This is too far. And her warmongering, her threatening war with Russia, this isn't right. So sometime around September, October, they switched their allegiance to Donald Trump, and hence you get all these leaks.
I think you're right. That makes perfect sense.
And Trump himself was Dr. Farrell said that Trump himself represents the mob faction, the actual mafia faction of the elite. Because there are various factions. Because what you think about where he comes from. He comes from what?
New York.
Casinos, right?
but all those buildings, every building that he builds is with the mob.
Yes,
those are all mob supported. All of those unions and everything, they're run. Yeah. There's a guy sitting at the union head who is a mobster.
Exactly.
So he's dealing with the mob every day, not just the casinos.
And
his dad, he came up from that poorer side of the contracting and building thing, from
Queens. Dad. So Queens,
knows,
right? Yeah.
He knows all the bosses, I'm sure.
So his idea was one thing, and this is one element why the elite turned against Hillary is because of Obamacare. Obamacare has devastated the what remains of the disposable income of the dwindling middle class, and that means they don't go to casinos anymore or hotels.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, and I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And
it wasn't like he woke up one day, I'm going to run for president. No, he had backing. And
He had plotted. He had thought about running for president, I think it was two cycles ago. So it was 2008.
He's always
been plotting and planning to be a presidential candidate.
And he sought the Reform Party's nomination in 2000. So you could make the claim that he's sort of a backdoor third party candidate.
Absolutely.
You absolutely
can make that claim. I mean, it was a remarkable, I've never seen any election cycle like that ever.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a crazy election. I do think that the emails did have an effect. I think right before the end, when people are talking about spirit cooking and Crowley and blood rituals, the Christians just went, no, I can't vote for Hillary. Done.
And those are really
the people who came out and won the election. Michigan, Pennsylvania.
You know, I told my wife election day before the numbers were coming in, because I felt that, said, Trump's probably going to win. She says, I don't think so. I said, well, I do. I think he's going to win, because one thing is the base is not motivated. You're not going to get the black vote to turn out.
Right.
They took the black vote for granted. They were condescending. They were stupid. And they knew that Hillary was rotten to the core. And you'd get the Democrats coming out to vote, but you're not going to get the turnout you got under Obama.
Right.
You know,
that's a good point.
You know, so that was key. And of course, all those white people that got Obama elected, all those racists, elected Trump, they didn't vote for it. They went back to the Republican fold this time. They voted for Trump. Yeah. And that was the difference, you know. So the corruption, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically using the government to make money for yourself. You're a 30-year politician, and that's what's going to happen when you're in power. Can you imagine the corruption of Hillary in power, even for 4 years? It would have been possible republic ending, because the venality that was shown even prior to the election was off the charts. I mean, refusal to prosecute James Comey and his kind of legal wrangling and weasel word. It's no reasonable person would prosecute. It's not a reasonableness test. It's nothing to do with reasonable. It's strict liability. Did you do it or didn't you do it? You know? And the people within the government who are being prosecuted for similar security violations are using the Hillary defense. Oh, well, it was just I made a mistake. It was unreasonable. And, so she had heavy duty information too. The special access security information. That is really intense. You have to go into like a secret room to be there to get it. It's not attached to a computer. Mm-hmm. How did she come up with special access information? Mm-hmm. The people in the government probably were just apoplectic. They were livid. Like, how can you get that and bring it out? You know, and all five of her servers are hacked. If that's all true and not a PSYOP or anything, it's just like, that is just gross negligence off the charts. So, and you know, then you got to bring into account the fact that she's very, very sick mentally, you know.
Well, that's another thing is, she couldn't even walk up a flight of stairs.
Yeah. I mean, she's in bad shape.
So.
She's having seizures and weird eye movements. She has disconjugate eyes. Her eyes don't scan like normal persons do. That's brain damage.
So, it would have been a weekend at Bernie's presidency.
Absolutely. Well, you get this. Who would really be running the country? Her chief of staff, Ido Podesta. That's what people probably saw. The insiders, you know, the one of the interesting things about D.C. is everybody knows what's public isn't really that great, but the grapevine there is incredible. Like, if you have facts about somebody, it can spread from one side of that city to the next in 2 hours. I mean, that's probably an exaggeration, but everybody will find out about people's habits, whether they're drunk, whether they're, you know, doing stuff. But I can imagine that campaign leaked, you know, that people knew what was going on behind the scenes, and they're just like, this is a horror show. And they probably, the elite saw it and said, we just can't do it, you know?
There was a it was a weekend leading up to it, and I think Red Ice had an article regarding the Beanie Babies. Heard about the Beanie Babies?
No, what's that?
There was what was it? Yeah, it was a email from Georgetown Law to the Clinton campaign on a fire sale of Beanie Babies for $9,600, where they were described as, being, well, here it is, Georgetown Law faculty and staff. My parents are visiting this weekend. This is what the email read. And I need to sell my enormous collection of Beanie Babies. I have approximately 480 little creatures of joy, and I'm selling each for $20. You must all buy 480, though. It's a collection, not an auction. They're very respectful and amicable with one another, and they are, for the most part, cat and dog friendly. Remember, these are stuffed little dolls. Right. Some are sassier than others, naturally. Please let me know. My parents can't find out. Now, according to Red Eyes, the photo of the Beanie Babies that was posted was just a generic photo that was plucked off the internet.
Interesting.
And the article points out, that the asking price, of course, was just under $10,000, which is just below the reporting requirement of the Bank Secrecy Act.
Right.
So it's indicative of sort of a structured payment, which is often indicative of illegal activity. Right. And of course, that's how Hastert got caught, right?
Right.
Now, again, the best explanation for this could be, that this is more of these code words. It's just, right.
What did they speculate on what the words meant?
They said that just given these little, the Beanie Babies were children and, what you could get is they're good with cats and dogs and right. The money said, and this was from Georgetown Law to the Clinton campaign.
Wow, that's incredible.
So I, again, reading between the lines, I guess you could say, or trying to decode this stuff.
Well, there was something in one of the Instagrams of Alephantis where they referenced something about Haitian children, So they knew, somebody who was in that part of that network knew about the Haitian children channel,
Yeah. Which years ago, remember DynCorp was caught doing this in the Balkans?
Yep.
And they were suspended. They were suspended from federal contracts for like 6 months or something. And I think it was...
It's a slap on the wrist. Yeah.
So, and who was it? Rumsfeld was confronted with this directly by Cynthia McKinney.
Interesting.
Who then was targeted. She lost her congressional seat.
Yeah. They did a full operation against her.
Yeah.
Had to make her look bad. And I remember they did something to her when she was coming in one of the offices there. I forgot what the whole story was. But yeah.
Yeah. She acted up apparently, with security. Yeah. And then, of course, everyone ran with it. Like it was big news, making fun of her.
Yeah.
That's
right. The real honest ones, they don't last there very long, to be honest with you.
No, they
three terms and they're gone.
Yeah, she's also exposed to the fact that when you get elected, immediately AIPAC comes up, makes you sign a pledge to support Israel.
And you get money. You don't just get a pledge. You sign this, you get some cash too.
And if you don't do it, your opponent gets money.
Then they know where to put the money, right? It's incredible. And they allow that. I mean, that's allowable. Why is that legal? I don't know.
So these, I think it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to really, deduce what's going on here.
Yeah.
Now it's shocking, perhaps, to those who aren't aware of other things like the Franken scandal, or Janet Palfrey, the Madam, and of course there's also the book by Henry Vinson, who Confessions of a DC Madam. The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail, where he revealed, because he was he ran a gay prostitution outfit under cover of a mortician service.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
In D.C. And what happened with that was it was exposed because certain government officials were using their government credit cards to pay for the services. And of course, someone at the GSA saw this as an irregularity, started investigating it. And they started asking him questions. And he said, "Well, I don't know. Talk to him." And one of the persons was Donald Gregg, who was the national security advisor to President Bush, and then also became the ambassador towards South Korea. And he was also a 30-year CIA veteran. And
they'd be smarter, right?
Yeah, and
pretty brazen.
Yeah, and this coincides. I think linking the Franken scandal to D.C. isn't too hard because that's.
What was that guy's name? He was he ended up dead.
Craig Spence.
Craig Spence, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the GOP lobbyist. Right. And he was running a mansion in D.C. where he'd hold these parties when things would get kind of strange later in the night, but it was wired for audiovisual.
Right, with mirrors, one-way mirrors or two-way mirrors or whatever.
Yeah, and Craig Spence tried to recruit Henry Vincent and get little kids, and Henry Vincent wouldn't do it. He only dealt with adults.
And there were big names at his parties. Big type, names of media people and stuff like that.
According to Henry Vincent, William Casey was a client.
Wow.
FBI, this is the Knights of Malta Catholic, William Casey.
Good Catholic, right?
Yes, there you go. And he was a client. And, this gets into the Johnny Gosch story, and some people have speculated this guy Jeff Gannon, this prostitute who was let into the White House, is Johnny Gosch all grown up. I don't know about that. Yeah. The Franken scandal, of course, was based out of Nebraska, but it was run by this guy named Larry King, who was a big GOP, his up and coming GOP figure who ran a credit union out there. And of course, he went to prison for embezzlement. It was like $40 million, which is a huge sum of money considering the size of the credit union.
Right.
But there's some speculation that that also blends into the Iran-Contra. Because if you realize what was going on with the savings and loans and banks at the time, they were being looted for all types of organized crime and intelligence operations, sort of like little BCCIs.
Right.
And there's a book by Peter Bruton called George Bush, the Mafia. And is it this George Bush, the Mafia? But he talks about the banks in Texas. And of course, there's the Silverado case with Neil Bush.
Right.
And basically these banks, they'd get sweetheart loans, and these money was being funneled through these banks or taken out of these banks to pay for all types of illegal activity or intelligence operations. And they would just cover loan after loan. Eventually the banks went kaput and the taxpayers are left with the bill.
Right.
And there's some speculation that maybe the credit union up in Nebraska was also involved in that. So you can never really have a full investigation of the pedophile operation without exposing this whole thing with the banks, you know.
Interesting. Well, it's interesting. When I was in D.C., I lived in Northern Virginia, and it was talked about that Larry King ended up at a car dealership in Northern Virginia working as a car salesman. So sometime in the mid to late 90s.
That's right.
It's interesting that after he blew out of there, he goes to D.C.
Yes. And yeah, I guess he was convicted for embezzlement, but he never really...
I don't think he served that much time,
No, he didn't. Yeah. In fact, I think his accuser served more time for, was it Alicia Reynolds?
Yeah, that's right. They put the girls in who made the claims about it in jail longer than he was in jail. Yeah.
They claimed that she perjured herself and she wouldn't recant. And the fact that she wouldn't recant proved she was guilty of perjury. And there was Paul Bonacci was
Bonacci,
the other
one. Yeah.
The two that wouldn't recant, others recanted. People said they recanted under pressure.
I don't doubt it. I think that there's a conversation between him and Stoner, this guy who turned up dead, where they were talking about it, that they were under pressure and they were being. I can't remember if they recanted or if they did recant, but they were under pressure to change their story.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people who was with Spence it's Ted Koppel. Ted Koppel was involved in the whole Spence scam. So that guy, this is like the head of one of the major media networks telling news to the people who was involved in this, blackmail scheme by Craig Spence.
And Craig Spence conveniently committed suicide.
Absolutely.
And the investigation up there has been led by the legislature, by this guy, John DeCamp.
Uh-huh.
And he was spearheading this investigation. And his investigator, Gary Caradori was his name.
Right, yep.
And he apparently got the goods. I got photographs and, I guess, of some prominent people.
Yeah, he told people he had the photographs before he got on the plane.
And his plane disintegrated in midair along with his son on board.
So, yeah.
Flying back from Chicago. I think this was 1989, July 1989. And they
That's
never...
dangerous business, man.
Yeah.
Exposing this stuff is very dangerous business.
And what happened was a farmer saw it disintegrate and come to the debris fall to the ground, and a car pulled up and someone collected like the briefcase, and the briefcase went missing.
Yeah, believe it.
So that case was shoved under the carpet, covered up.
Well, they're doing that to this whole Pizzagate, They're trying to forestall it. They're actually, somebody claimed that they tried to juice the Google, Google search engine by creating a new story that involved English soccer players, they called it Pizzagate, so that when people type in Pizzagate to Google, it doesn't show up on the search term. It was pretty remarkable. I think they made a good argument that that was a scam. You know, basically they created a fake story.
So what does that suggest about what's going on? I mean, Google is a huge mega corporation, is helping cover up a pedophile ring. Why would they want to cover up a pedophile ring?
Who knows? Good question. I mean, there's this goes. I mean, it's known that Schmidt, who was one of the heads of Google, if I think he was the CEO at one point, was basically a non-designated member of the Clinton campaign. So he was always around. He was seen holding a press badge. And he was, I think there was a meeting between him and Hillary where he said, I could do anything. When I started writing, or I made a couple videos that showed Hillary was sick, and they suspended both of my, I actually tried to avoid getting suspended by having two different accounts, and they suspended both of my accounts on the same day. And I think that was a message, you know, hey, don't go there. You're not allowed to talk about Hillary. And I had some kind of like Democratic, I traced back his name. I had some Democratic operative friend me on Twitter to just follow all my posts and stuff like that. So, you know, there definitely were people trying to shape information, and probably to right now for Pizzagate, you know, because I think it probably leads. It'll probably be something just like the Savile thing where they just found another pedophile under this rock and another pedophile and another group of people and another building where this stuff took place. So, you know, people who are on the inside of that whole thing probably know what's going on. Even Alifantis actually, I have to verify this, but he came out and said this whole thing is, you know, doing so much damage to me. But what he didn't do is offer a general denial. He didn't say, I am not part of this, which, you know, I would think somebody who was involved in that would just immediately say that, you know, I take no part in this. I'm not a pedophile, blah, 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 blah. But he didn't say that. So, yeah, things are going to get much in. And I say that when January 20th rolls around, the new administration comes in, people will talk to them, you know, who can't talk to FBI or DOJ, you know. So,
well, is there a chance that this could be so bad that the FBI simply, the rank and file aren't going to tolerate it?
I mean, well, that was the argument about what happened with the failed prosecution of Clinton, right? Didn't a lot of rank filers, like five people quit or they got fired, and then, you know, the word was is that the FBI insiders were furious. So,
I mean, that might have happened with Hastert, because why? why was he targeted?
How many people did they say Hastert abused? It wasn't that many, was it? Five, six?
Well, there's only a payoff of a handful of people, but
yeah. So I bet there's a lot more than that.
Yeah. Now there was Sybil Evans was talking about this, about how do you remember back in the late 90s during the Lewinsky scandal, mm-hmm. when what's his name? Hustler Magazine, Larry Flynt.
Larry Flynt. He was asking for more information. Yeah.
Offering rewards and all that. Apparently, according to Sybil Evans, he was being fed information from the FBI, who was conducting illegal surveillance, to go after Clinton's accusers or opponent, or rather his opponents, to expose their scandals. Yeah, and so what happened was an FBI detail was put on this, and what happened in the course of doing this, they uncovered a lot of this pedophilia.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
But they were told that they couldn't do anything about it because it was a bigger investigation. And so you had a lot of these agents being forced to wiretap and listen to children being delivered to political figures or businessmen and stuff like that.
They said back in the day, I remember reading about the Finders, which was supposed to be a huge pedophile blackmail operation that was in D.C.
Yeah.
The guy, yeah. Have you heard of the Finders?
Yeah, it was Ted Gunderson exposed that, and
the guy who wrote the more recent Franklin scandal story. I can't remember. Nick Bryant. As part of that whole thing.
Well, and then it was shut down for national security. The investigation was shut down for national security.
That's right,
reasons.
It came from the top. Yeah, that's what they said.
I mean, because that it isn't that. Well, I mean, it's one of these. It's like drugs, right? It's like I was listening to talking to Doug Valentine, and we were talking about the narcotics trafficking and the problems of it was back in the day of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, mm-hmm. and why that was shut down and folded into the DEA, which is more controllable.
Interesting.
is because every time they did an investigation on a narcotics trafficking, they're running up against an intelligence operation.
Interesting.
And so they get shut down. They could only go so far, and then it gets shut down. And I think you're running the same thing with pedophilia. You think you can go? You only go so far. Sandusky, right. Maybe Hastert.
But get a limited hangout. They chuck somebody out, and there's a whole network that's done. You know, same thing. Dutroux. They just busted Dutroux. They never the guy Nihul, who was kind of the big wig, black magician type, who hung out with the elite. I don't think he ever got prosecuted, or they never busted him.
And Dutroux. I mean, this unemployed electrician. Who was voted a pension by the parliament, right. And given a virtual unlimited prescription for Rohypnol, the date rape drug.
Interesting, I didn't know that.
And he also owned
a, three houses or four houses.
Right? Yeah, multiple houses, and yep. with no real income to speak of other than this pension. And then at the same time, there's one case where a carpenter or electrician. There was with a cop, and they're looking at one of the homes that had been one of the rooms had been boarded off, like drywall.
Right.
And the guy said he heard children behind the walls there, and the cop said, "No, you don't hear anything," and made him leave.
Yeah. Wow.
So that there was an official. I mean, not just cover up. There was like he was aided and abetted by the officials. Yeah. And we of course in the United States we hear nothing of this. By the way, we have to read.
Websites that are translated from Belgian and stuff.
Yeah, like that. Or Dave McGowan. I read it in Program to Kill, Dave McGowan's book.
Yeah, I wish he was here. It's too bad that guy left us because he would probably just be tearing it up about Clinton and the pedophile stuff.
So. But apparently there were so many protests in Belgium when this occurred that someone commandeered like a fire truck and washed down the parliament with a hose.
Well, they called it the Night of the White Shirts or something where 300,000 people walked out in downtown Belgium because the public knew it was a cover-up. The guy who was prosecuting was taken off the case. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that may happen in this whole Pizzagate thing. I mean, you don't know.
Well, there has to be wide public conscience of this, and you're not going to get that with the, with the controlled media. It's not it's not reported on.
Yeah,
and people are kind of when they hear about this, they're like, what? Well, you have to put these things in context. You have to understand what the Franken scandal was. You have to understand what the Finders case was. You understand the McMartin case and the role that trafficking and blackmail and pedophilia play.
In power politics. Yeah.
In power politics, I mean, blackmail is the best currency in politics.
Yeah.
That's how you control things.
Disappointing. Yeah, that's just the truth. I mean, especially. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think they'll find. I mean, I think they'll find out the Podestas are like occultists. And that this is kind of for them. It's not as much of a moral, conundrum for them. They just that's what they're going to find. That's what I think that they'll find out in the next couple months. And through Abramovich, and I mean, she's already got connections to Crowley. She's done some backward walking mirror thing, which Crowley specifically laid out as a kind of exercise. So she's got some definite occult pedigree, for real.
Yeah, and Crowley himself, of course, as you talked about in our previous discussion in the late summer, was that he was an intelligence asset.
Absolutely,
and he had many ties, and he had ties to Kinsey. And this gets into a broader discussion of what's really going on here, because we're talking about the degradation of society, not just the sort of this elite pedophilia group, but Crowley himself, pedophile played a big part in his philosophy.
Yeah.
And perhaps, again, it's the ultimate excess, perhaps. It's the ultimate, violation. You go after the kids. It's inversion of what adults should do for kids, which is nurture and protect rather than destroy and degrade.
I think he said in one of his books, it was World's Tragedy, he wanted to introduce sodomy to the young men of England.
That's right. And, of course, the World's Tragedy was Christianity, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
World's Tragedy was the birth and death of Christ, so it was a direct assault upon Christian values. What his whole life was, really.
The role this plays in power politics is interesting because not only, of course, we have the dynamic of blackmail we have to consider and just how pervasive it is. And as a practical matter, you say, well, this is how the intelligence agencies would control things like oversight, get control of the political, make sure that they have pliable, officials, in place. There was James Corbett had a show a while back. He interviewed, forget his name, from Europe. It was a professor from Europe. He came up with an idea called kakistocracy. It's just rule of the worst in Greek, I think. And the idea was that why would the elite want to practice pedophilia? And his theory was this one way that the elite ensure that there's a reliable stable of psychopaths, because the trauma that creates in children, the shattering effect, the disassociation that creates from this pool of victims, you can have a reliable source of people who are going to think like you.
Right. Ruthless, take advantage of innocence or don't care about other people. That's believable. I mean,
so there's a sort of a method to the madness. Right. There's a sort of a ruthless strategy to it. But another thing is, I think we talked about this last time talking about Crowley, is sort of Crowley as a change agent. I think I referred to him as sort of a chemical concentrate that's put into the cultural well, and it spoils the well.
Yes.
And his influence and his culture influence, entertainment, of course, with the rock music, and how many celebrities are devotees of Crowley, and how in order to rise the political to work your way up the political food chain and even entertainment is you literally I guess it's like you have to meet the devil at the crossroads and sell your soul,
right?
And this would suggest that there's something like that bargain is made rather frequently in Washington, D.C. or in Hollywood or in New York.
I would agree with that. I mean, there's some kind of system that people who aren't part of the pyramid, so to speak, don't see, but it happens. And if you look at, like, for Alifantis, for example, all of his followers or all these people on the Instagram, you'll see them making the one eye symbol. The eye of Horus is just a common theme. As well as the smiley face as well, which is kind of a chaos magician kind of idea. You'll see these symbols. So all these people in that group have, and what's interesting is what's missing. There's no pictures of the Bible quotes, family pictures, nice, serene holiday pics. It's all kind of weird, occult, strange, modern art type posts. But you see that this kind of secret society occult thing has pervaded at least this Alifantis case from really top to bottom. And so you see these people, it's kind of this change agent. They probably have normalized their behavior. They just think that this is it. You know, this is what we do. And you can see the kind of same thing happening. I heard one guy today talk about the girl who sings Half Party in the USA. What's her name? It's but she has all kinds of pictures of pizza. She has a bed frame of pizza, and Miley Cyrus. Sorry, so Miley Cyrus has made that bargain. You know, she made that bargain to get into the Age of Horus, you know, kind of mentality. And I think that Crowley's influence of total permissiveness, no restraints. And when he talked about freedom, he meant freedom from restraints, not kind of freedom in a political sense.
Yeah.
And you see that through him. And I mean, it's interesting. There's a speech by Saville where he talks about, I'm totally free. Nobody has achieved the level of freedom that I have. That's not verbatim, but you can trace this kind of some of this modern stuff back to the occult and Crowley and kind of cult ideas.
And when you get figures like Crowley, connect to people like Kinsey, and Kinsey connects to the foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation. Okay. And at the same time, I think we talked about this last time, is you have Playboy being published, you have the cracking of the production code in Hollywood, the normalization of pornography, and so society is degraded, and this isn't just some sort of you could say a gradual erosion that's occurring naturally, or just the progression of certain events. Is a lot of this was planned out. I think I mentioned to you off call that in the 1950s you had this thing called the authoritarian personality that was published by the American Jewish Committee, and it stated that the America was threatened with fascism because of one thing was the strong nuclear family with a strong male role model, Christian male role model, and the one way that you would go about weakening this threat would be to weaken that family. And how do you weaken that family? Weaken that family through permissiveness and entertainment, through sexual revolution. And of course, the sexual revolution, which is, I think, is a phrase coined by Wilhelm Reich. And he became sort of the, although he had long since passed away in the 60s, he became sort of this figure. I think it was in the student riots in 1968. They were throwing copies of Wilhelm Reich's book at the police.
Interesting.
You know, the what's that book on fascism? The something on fascism. I forget the exact title. But this just shows the figure. But of course, he's being promoted. He's put on the cover of the New York Times, and of course, Kinsey's put on the cover of Time magazine.
Right.
So they're all being promoted.
Right. And Leary promoted Crowley. So
yeah,
the mass psychology of fascism.
Mass psychology of fascism. That's it. And his idea was this goes to the cultural Marxist strategy where the long march to the institutions, you change the culture and then you can change the political. You can't change the politics first. And this is the cultural Marxists, the sexual revolutionaries.
Yeah, you can see that on the left today. Their results are
all
these crybaby snowflakes.
And even today, as in the Ukraine, where the Western influence isn't Thomas Jefferson. It isn't, it's feminism, it's gay rights, it's pornography, right?
Wow,
and so you want to destroy that traditional culture, But there was a And to show how devious this is, and how well – I didn't realize how well planned this is, but apparently there's a thing called the Jaffe Memo.
I'm not familiar with it.
It is a memorandum written on a Planned Parenthood meeting that was conducted in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1969. And it called for – in order to reduce the population, this was done in consultation with the U.S. government to solve the population problem, that in the ensuing decades certain things were going to be promoted. One was homosexuality. And now, of course, how do you promote homosexuality? You normalize it in the media,
culture and the entertainment
culture. But the one thing you can do it, and this is fun, how you can promote it is that this gets into the debate of what causes it. And I think generally what you can say is it's a ambivalent, distant or absent fathers, broken families, trauma, and traumatized individuals suffer from it. And so if you increase illegitimacy, you reduce the marriage rate, increase divorce, increase teenage pregnancy, what they're promoting with sex, you're going to increase dysfunctional families, which will increase traumatized individuals, which will produce more people with sexual dysfunctions or confusion. And it's in the memo. At the same time –
it's amazing. You see it played out. This is today.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's the normal kind of pattern.
And this is poisoning of the well. And one thing you can see where it's really played out was in the Catholic Church with the priest scandals in the 70s and the 80s. And I had a discussion with E. Michael Jones about this. We're talking about how no one focuses on the culture in general.
Right.
I mean, the media, entertainment, the secular culture, the cultural mandarins, how they changed, how they work to change, sexualize the culture. Then they're shocked. The church isn't immune from it. They poison the well and say, oh, look what you're causing. And his point was the very priests that are caught up in the scandals in Boston, Bernard Law, or the very priests at the Boston Globe, the people who did the
spotlight
investigation, they're the ones that the Boston Globe was praising for their innovative youth outreach.
Wow, that's amazing.
So they don't take any ownership of this. Like you can destroy the culture, poison it, and then be shocked that this has some sort of they're not really shocked. I think it's bad faith on their part.
And you can kind of see this kind of rise of Trump, what's called the alt-right, as really a reaction against the encroachment of that cultural Marxism, anti-family.
Mm-hmm.
And people I think that's why a lot of the white people in the Midwest came out to vote. They saw Hillary Clinton and Obama as, basically front soldiers for this Planned Parenthood, destruction of the family, cultural Marxism, that to me is just rotten to the core.
I mean, it's inchoate. It's not all. It's not always fought out. But that's national. That's electoral politics. It's blunt. It's crude. You know, especially national electoral politics. But it's there. And a good example, that I would say that perhaps in North Carolina, it might have made a difference, because North Carolina is where there was that faux controversy regarding transgendered bathrooms. Obama won North Carolina in 08 and 12. Clinton lost it in 16. And Trump won it. No, could be that that was just enough to get the people out. I'm voting for Trump, but you know why? Because he comes across as normal.
Right.
He's a man. And and so this is where that has its effect. I do think that maybe in a state like North Carolina, where they're getting – the state itself was being blockaded by the New World Order for, for having the temerity to say –
the temerity to reject weirdo politics. Oh, it's just a thing.
And, you know,
I mean, oh, God. It's
and, and it's if you doubt that it was a coordinated plan, I mean, PayPal, Bruce Springsteen, Hollywood, Madison Avenue. I mean, then you have the NFL in Georgia, which is pushing gay marriage. Right? It was they threatened to pull – if there's some sort of Defensive Marriage Act, I think, in Georgia.
Right.
And this is before the Supreme Court created the right to gay marriage. But they threatened to pull the Super Bowl out of Georgia. You know, and the, why is the NFL involving itself in that? You think, aren't they alienating their fan base, which are, I think, by and large, heterosexual men?
Yeah, I think so.
You know,
I would say 95%, 98%.
Yeah, and but they're a limit. They're just, but I do think that I think the NFL is largely a weapon of the New World Order. That's why you're seeing, you know, they're it's been feminized in many ways, and they're wondering why their ratings are dropping. Tanking. You know, because I'm sick of seeing football players wearing pink all the time.
We're in a culture comp, man. It's really pretty serious. I mean, if you step out of it, you can see it. I mean, I think that we may be in the trench. Our people don't see the broader angle, but it's we're in really in the. I do believe that the vote really was a fight for whether this country was going to hold on to proper values or just go way off the deep end with Clinton, you know.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's how people were driven to vote for Donald Trump. This isn't an endorsement of Donald Trump. I'm just saying,
This is
just how it's being interpreted. I mean,
agreed. That's a good point. Excellent point.
I mean, it's again, this would. I mean, this isn't to say the Republican Party. I mean, obviously, we've talked about the Franklin scandal. This involved the Republican Party. You have the June 29th, 1989 Washington Times article about call boys in the White House. That was the Reagan and Bush, Reagan and then the succeeding Bush administration.
That's right.
And so it cuts across both aisles. And again, this suggests that what's going on here is a control mechanism. But I do think there's something much more darker and spiritual to it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there definitely is. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these people, how this information gets more detailed, because there's some incredible researchers. People are going through their building permits. They're going through really detailed, kind of a fine-tooth combs type of analysis.
Well, shouldn't the FBI be doing that?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's one thing Ed Oppenheimer was talking about with you, talking about how a lot of this might have come from the NYPD that Trump has connections with.
Right. And he made a good point. He was talking about how there was a Hawaii connection to all of this information and how Trump made a mention of Hillary going to Hawaii as an inside kind of jab at her that he knew, that he knows the inside information.
That's right, at the Al Smith dinner. It's right.
Yeah, at the Al Smith dinner where he just roasted her. Like the grapevine works very well. I've been surprised about, you know, if you have good information, people will share that, you know.
It is currency. True.
Yeah, so it is kind of a currency, and, you know, people talk about it at the bar. They talk about it over dinner. They share it. So, you know, some of the NYPD information may have gotten out.
And these are the guys who aren't going to sit for this because he said, we have kids this age.
Right. Yeah, it's an abomination, you know. If there's pedophilia, if it's worse than that, if they're actually going into child sacrifice and stuff like that. This is an abomination, you know, and it's right there. It would have been right there next to the president.
Yeah.
You know, if Hillary Clinton was president. So it goes to the top. It's not something that's just kind of, out in the Midwest, kind of like Franklin, although that information did, that stuff did go to DC, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, I think Ed made this, Ed was, I think might've been honest with me. He said maybe a deal was made that we had this on you. So
maybe
kind of
late. I don't know. You know, I saw the video of like there was a video leak that showed Clinton and both Clinton's Bill and Hillary celebrating the night of the election. Cause they got some early returns that were good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
I think that they may have thought that it was in the bag, you know? So, but yeah, they're Clinton gang is just, it's a criminal enterprise. You know, if there's a prosecutor with a RICO statute in hand, I think that you could apply that to the foundation and all what they were up to.
Well, that guy, Charles Ortel, I think Ed Opperman interviewed him and talking about how the foundation itself doesn't even have its paperwork in order.
I mean, it's amazing to think that. Like, you have an ex-president and two lawyers who went to Yale Law School, and they couldn't even get the fundamentals of the paperwork together.
Yeah.
And they're making billions of dollars. That's what somebody talked about, the pathology of the Clintons, where they have to get in trouble, where they're just constantly flouting things. And it's weird, you know, like they're sloppy. It's really like sick, you know. It shows some of the pathology of their thinking. It's just like you can't do the simplest things. So,
well, between now and January 20th, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. If there's anything,
it's going to be an interesting ride for the next year, man. It'll be interesting to see that one phase between now and January 20th and what happens in January 20th and later.
I'm skeptical. I just don't think. I think based on my research is that this whole pedophilia thing is pervasive, and it's one of the control mechanisms that define the system. And I think to really do a thorough investigation of this would open up such a can of worms, and it bleeds into so much else. It bleeds into drug trafficking and the true,
entertainment. I wouldn't be surprised if this thing gets touched like it was in England, where there are other prominent figures who.
Well, I mean, we have the revelations of Hollywood. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, of
was an open secret that movie?
Yeah,
that
open secret
documentary that came out. I mean, they talked about it.
I mean, it's so pervasive in the entertainment industry that it literally defines the industry, right? It's what is what it is, and people know.
People talk about it. Yeah,
yeah, and it's so part it's of
Corey Feldman or Elijah Wood has made statements that it's all over the place.
You know? Yeah. So, well, we'll see how it works out. Now, I know you're working on a documentary.
Yeah. So I just my documentary Indiegogo campaign just ended. It's about a spate of serial killing or killing of young men throughout the United States, known commonly as the Smiley Face Killings.
I've heard about that over the course of a few years. Can you give us some of the vague details of that? What is that?
So what's been happening is there's been young men in college towns who have gone out for a night of drinking, or it usually happens at nighttime. They disappear. They either leave a bar, they're kicked out of a bar, and they're never seen and then found in water, whether it's a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later. And they're typically called drowned, or they're really the authorities just put a tag on it as an accidental death. But I believe that something much more sinister is happening, and that there's a pattern of these killings that is happening in really all over the country now. But it started kind of in, there were centers like New York, Boston, Minnesota, and some of those college towns, Indiana, Indianapolis. And I've covered some of the cases on my YouTube channel. If you go to William Ramsey Investigates, you kind of see some of them. But there's actually was a cluster in Boston, Zach Marr. These people who disappear, and the MO or the phenomenon is that nobody sees them go in the water. They're just found in water. And oftentimes they've been searched thoroughly by police assets. And I think my conclusions are very disturbing, but I do believe that there's a serial killer loose in the country and who's targeting this kind of group of 18 to 26 year old men. And I do implore your listeners to be very careful. Don't get your drink spiked. And it's kind of like a corollary to the whole phenomenon of women being roofied, you know?
Yeah.
Men don't think it happens to them. And I think that that's why this serial killing has gone on for such a long time, is men don't think they're roofied. But there's tons of stories of guys who mysteriously wake up the next day. They don't even know what happened. They've had two beers and, you know, they wake up on somebody's lawn at 8 a.m. going, what the hell happened? They're the lucky ones. They're the ones who survived. but I do believe they're being drugged. Yeah. So I mean, look at Cosby. He drugged 50 or 100 women, and God only knows. There was a guy, Shannon Sharp. Do you ever hear of him?
The football player.
Football player, but he was a multi-jurisdictional roofier. He was smart, and I believe that the killer. Well, I don't want to go into that, but it'll all become very clear in the documentary. I don't want to reveal kind of my conclusions.
Huh, okay. Okay, well, that's something to look forward to. When do you expect it to be done with that?
I told my supporters on Indiegogo that it would be done by January. So I'm actually hurtling forward. I have most of my stuff laid out. I just have to organize it and put it in a cohesive, 2-hour documentary.
Okay, interesting. Wow.
And it's really, the FBI really should be investigating this kind of spate of killing.
And for some reason, they're not. There's no...
Well, it's another kind of mystery of why the authorities are not kind of dealing with some of these things. So it's unfortunate.
Hmm. Okay. Well, where can we, people follow your work again?
Well, you can go to my website, which is coldinvestigations.com. All my books are available there. I also post a lot on Facebook, Twitter, and my YouTube channel is William Ramsey Investigates. I have tons of information about Crowley, smiley face killings, Hillary Clinton's illness. I had a really one video that had 3 million views. So people are, people are still interested in her illness. It's kind of, the interest is it's still continuing even after the election. So I find that interesting. Mm-hmm. All my videos are there.
Okay, great. Well, listen, William, I want to thank you for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Tim. I appreciate you, the invitation to come back.
And we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, let's keep in touch.
So, see if there's ever an investigation, an official investigation of this. And that again, I think I'm skeptical of that because I think what it opens up, I think what we think is going on.
Well, if the past is precedent, I'm skeptical as well.
Yeah, and expect some dead bodies to pop up somewhere or some people to go missing.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
So, I like for this all to be a hoax because I said if that were the case, there'd be no victims, but I don't think that's the case here, unfortunately. So
yeah, I agree.
So, well, listen, thanks a lot and good night.
Good night.